Welcome to Monday Morning Murder in the News with Alyssa Carroll.
Good morning, heathens. Happy Murder in the News Monday. Did you guys behave yourselves this weekend? Those of you who worked, we appreciate your sacrifice, as I always say, but the rest of you, did you keep your noses clean? All right. Okay, so our first article comes from citizen.co.za. This is from March 21st, and the title reads, Person of Interest, Interpol on Board to Unravel Case of Missing Sodwana Bay Skipper. I'm going to mispronounce things because I don't read these ahead of time. Okay. So the family of missing Sodwana skipper John Matambu and police denied claims that a person of interest has been taken in for questioning. The puzzling case of the mysterious disappearance of KwaZulu-Natal skipper John Matambu over the weekend was rocked by unfounded rumors in the media that a person of interest has been taken in for questioning. ZA, isn't that New Zealand? Despite the fact that Interpol and the police attaché in Mozambique have been roped in to help find Matambu, the so-called person of interest, unfortunately, has disappeared like the morning mist. Ooh. Family of missing Sodwana Bay skipper slam rumors. So according to the skipper's family and the KwaZulu-Natal police, there has been no such development in the case. Matambu, whom locals refer to as the, quote, legend of Sodwana Bay, went missing while on a charter with an unidentified man on Saturday afternoon, March 16th. His 21-foot Yelled Cat ski boat, Magnum II, T-O-O, as in Magnum also, was found wrecked and burnt on a beach near the bay of Ponta Dobela in Mozambique the next morning. Oh, correction. This is out of South Africa. So police work across borders. The search for Matambu entered its fifth day on Thursday. According to National Police spokesperson Brigadier Athlena Maith, local police authorities were working closely with Interpol and the police attaché, facilitating cooperation between the two governments in the investigation. Then it says in bold, person of interest, fake news. Matambu's niece Candace shared her disappointment about the fake news, which started doing the rounds following an article published by the Zululand Observer on Wednesday. According to the publication, a, quote, person of interest had been taken to Manguzi for questioning by the police. Sadly, Matambu has not been found. The family and authorities would be the first to send out an update, Candace told News 24. This was also confirmed by police spokesperson Lieutenant Colonel Robert Nchunda. I so apologize. Quote, no one has been arrested or taken in for questioning. So what we know so far about the mysterious disappearance of Sodwana Skipper. The unidentified man who chartered the boat was out drinking at a local bar in Sodwana Bay in Matambu with Matambu and other skippers on Friday night. He told them that he was terribly ill and his last wish was to go out on the sea with a boat. Matambu apparently then took the unidentified man to Island Rock Beach on the north coast of KwaZulu-Natal on Saturday. The ski boat was expected to return to Sodwana Bay on Saturday afternoon, but the burnout remains were found along the Mozambique coastline on Sunday morning with the two men missing. At 10 p.m. on Saturday, a report was received by the National Sea Rescue Institute saying the ski boat may have been spotted as far north as Santa Maria close to the Mozambique coastline. NSRI spokesperson Craig said the real concern was the possibility of foul play. He said it was unclear as to what happened that led to the vessel beaching and found to be completely burnt. Extensive search operation launched for missing skipper and passenger. And then it says in quotes, police and law enforcement, security agencies, and maritime authorities are continuing in an extensive search and investigations to try to locate the two missing men and to piece together what has transpired. Anyone with any information, contact the NSRI EOC Emergency Operations Center. Anyway, coming out of South Africa, my apologies for saying New Zealand. I knew better than that. It's been a long weekend. Hey, you know. Anyway, so the person that sent me that article from South Africa, thank you so, so much. That's what I'm talking about with the international news. We want to know what's going on in the world, too. We Americans are not as tunnel visioned and self-absorbed as you might think. I personally love to hear about news from all over the world. So anyway, thank you for sending that article. So our next article comes from WXII12.com and the title reads, North Carolina man shot, killed by Concord man known as Batman, Rowan County deputies say. Okay, here we go. A North Carolina man known as Batman is facing a murder charge after killing his friend, according to deputies with the Rowan County Sheriff's Office. On Thursday, just before 1 p.m., Rowan County deputies were called to a home in the 500 block of Crystal Lane in Kannapolis after someone who lived there called and said a family member had been shot. I'm scrolling down. There's a lot of pop-ups. The caller said the suspect, who already fled, went by the name of Batman. When deputies arrived, they found Jonathan Yancey dead in the home. He was shot once. Witnesses identified the shooter as Cody Helms. Helms, 36, and Yancey, 33, were friends, but they got into an argument, which led to the shooting. So every one of you who self-identifies as Batman out there, leave a comment or leave a comment on the Facebook fan page as well. I want to see how many Batmans we have out there. Not to make light of the murder, of course. So, Helms, a.k.a. Batman, was captured by an officer with the Kannapolis Police Department who was helping with the search. He was charged with murder and is in custody at the Rowan County Jail to await his first court appearance. And then it says, if anyone has any information about this incident, you're asked, you know, call someone. But that's the whole article. That sucks. I'd like to know a little bit more about Batman, although obviously his victim, rest his soul. Our next article comes from CNN.com, and the title reads, DNA collected from chewing gum leads to arrest and conviction in 1980 cold case murder. So this is, let's see, Robert Plimpton makes a court appearance in 2021 in the 1980 killing of college student Barbara Tucker. DNA found in a piece of discarded chewing gum led to the arrest and conviction of a suspect in a 1980 cold case murder in Oregon, prosecutors say. Robert Plimpton, 60, was found guilty last week on one count of first-degree murder and four counts of second-degree murder in the killing of Mount Hood Community College student Barbara Tucker, according to a news release from the Multnomah County District Attorney's Office. 19-year-old Tucker was, quote, kidnapped, sexually assaulted, and beaten to death. On January 15, 1980, the release states, charges of rape and sexual abuse against Plimpton were dropped, according to a document released by the DA's office. Plimpton had pleaded not guilty, and his attorneys say they intend to appeal his convictions. Quote, we will appeal, and we are confident that his convictions will be overturned, says attorneys Stephen Howes and Jacob Howes in a statement to CNN. Plimpton remains in custody in Multnomah County while he awaits sentencing, the DA's office said. His sentencing hearing is scheduled for June. Then it goes on to say, witness heard screaming. And there's a picture of Miss Barbara Tucker here. She was very pretty. She had sort of the kind of feathered all the way down to the back thing going, which really works for her face shape. Witnesses had seen a woman in apparent distress around the time of the murder, the document from the DA's office states. One woman described seeing a female, quote, waving her arms with a bloody face, while another said she saw, quote, a man peeking through the bushes next to the college parking lot. A man said he heard a woman screaming and saw two figures in the distance, and a fourth witness reported seeing a woman with mud on her pants waving her arms on the side of the road. Oh, that's so sad. Tucker's body was discovered the following morning near a parking lot by students who were on their way to a class at the college in Gresham, the DA's news release states. Quote, these cold cases are not lost or forgotten for our department. Then Police Chief Claudio Grangian said in a statement after his arrest in June of 2021, each one represents a person to our officers, and their tragic stories are passed down through the generations in hopes of one day bringing honor to their names and a sense of justice and closure to their cases. Swabs taken during Tucker's autopsy were used to create a DNA profile of the suspect, according to the DA's news release. A break in the investigation came after police asked Virginia-based DNA technology company Parabon Nanolabs to look at the profile and try to identify possible matches. A snapshot phenotype prediction, or a test to predict someone's physical traits based on their DNA, helped genetic genealogists narrow down possible suspects, something Parabon's chief genetic genealogist, Cece Moore, said, quote, ended up being key in this case. Moore said while she was building family trees of the people who shared DNA with the sample provided by police, she discovered World War II draft record cards of redheaded men. Quote, this case at the time was the most confident red hair prediction Parabon scientists had ever had. So there was extremely high likelihood that the person who murdered and raped Barbara had red hair. End quote. I mean, I've got some gingers in my family. Rude, honestly. That helped because it made me focus on one particular line of the family and follow that red hair down. And then I landed in Oregon. In March of 2021, Moore was able to identify Robert Plimpton as the likely suspect. Investigators used that information to begin surveilling Plimpton and were able to collect a wad of chewing gum that detectives witnessed him spit out. DNA pulled from the gum matched the profile from the autopsy swabs, and Plimpton was arrested. I mean, it sounds pretty cut and dry to me. So Cece calls the case, quote, one of the highlights of my career in genetic genealogy. Well, yeah, absolutely. Anyway, the point is that his ass is caught, he's behind bars, and we're all thankful for that. Alrighty, our next one comes from FoxNews.com. Title reads, Virginia mother killed, body found in trash truck. That's horrible. Authorities said that the 30-year-old's body was found in a trash truck in Virginia. A 30-year-old Virginia woman's body was found in a trash truck after family members sounded the alarm that she had failed to pick up her child from daycare. Oh, according to the Prince William County Police Department, officers responded to a home in Lake Ridge, Virginia, on Thursday, March 21st, at approximately 8:50 p.m., after concerned family members said that 30-year-old Tatiana Zakia was missing. Her family members said that they became concerned after the 30-year-old mother did not pick up her child from daycare. Authorities confirmed to Fox 5 that they began searching for her vehicle at the start of the investigation, but learned that her car was being driven by her roommate, 28-year-old Brendan Devon White. Police said that they located her car in Newport News City, Virginia, and said that her belongings were still in the vehicle. Detectives stopped a nearby trash collection truck and found the victim's body. Following the investigation, police arrested White and charged him with second-degree murder. And that's the whole article. Woo, that one stands out to me this week for some reason. So as I open these tabs for these news articles that I find, or you guys send me, I just leave them open in my Safari, in my little internet browser on my phone, And so that way I just kind of build these. It makes it really nice. But I've been trying to open windows for things that I wanted to talk to you guys about so that I wouldn't forget. And one of them is Ruby Frankie, Eight Passengers. Is that what that show was called on YouTube? I didn't watch it, but they were family bloggers. If you guys are listening to me, I'm sure you know who Ruby Frankie is at this point. But, you know, she stood up there in front of that judge and was all, I take all the accountability. I take all the responsibility. Wah, wah, wah. Have you listened to the prison phone calls? That's some crazy stuff. You guys be looking that up. Ruby Frankie and Jody Hildebrandt's, like, prison phone calls. That woman, Ruby, is not nice, guys. I should probably watch my mouth. But anyway, I just wanted to bring that up because I've been keeping an eye on that. Our next article comes from WTAJ.com. WTAJ, your news leader, says, title reads, man wearing ghost mask charged in Pennsylvania chainsaw homicide. Carbon County. Details have been released regarding a homicide in Carbon County where a man was killed by a man wearing a ghost mask while using a chainsaw. Pennsylvania State Police stated a call came for help around 3:30 p.m. on Monday for an active assault on the 200 block of Carbon Street in Lehighton Borough. Once on the scene, troopers said they saw on video surveillance the victim, 59-year-old Edward Whitehead Jr., was struck with a chainsaw and a knife to the head by a man later identified as Zach Russell Moyer, 30, of Lehighton. PSP reporter Moyer was wearing a mask and a black costume-like garment that was similar to one worn by killers in the Scream movies. Moyer was later located at a different home on Carbon Street, and state police surrounded the house. Troopers stated they began communicating with Moyer using a notebook, which eventually led to Moyer surrendering himself to state police. Well, good Lord, what were they writing on those notebooks? Moyer told police that he intended to murder the victim because of crimes he believed the victim to have committed, as stated in the affidavit. Whitehead was transported to St. Luke's Carbon campus, where he later died from his injuries. Moyer has been charged with criminal homicide for his alleged involvement. That sucks. Oh, yeah. Oh, this one's going to be tough, but I'm not going to edit this out. So here we go. The next one is from eonline.com, e-news. So take it. Well, I know that it actually happened, but you get what I'm saying. And it says, a California man arrested after allegedly eating leg of person killed by train. This is going to be tough. Rosendo Tellez, 27, was arrested after allegedly removing human remains from a crime scene and was later seen eating the body part, according to local news and eyewitnesses. Now, I will say, I did know about this before I got this article, but I don't know the specifics behind it. I just saw footage of this guy walking around. No, it was sent to me, but it was footage of a guy walking around like gnawing on a leg. So that's all. I don't know anything of the background, so I'm just, you know, transparency. Here we go. A man identified as Rosendo Tellez, 27, has been arrested for allegedly removing human remains from the city's Amtrak station following an incident in which a pedestrian was struck by a train. Eyewitnesses at the scene, including local construction worker Jose Ibarra, alleged they saw Tellez, who residents in Wasco, that doesn't sound right, said is homeless. Anyway, eating a human leg. Quote, whatever he had in his hand, he started biting on it and everything, and it turned out to be a person's leg, Ibarra recalled to NBC affiliate KGET. Quote, on the video that we have, it shows clearly that he started chewing on the leg and everything. A video posted to social media shows Tellez bent over what seemed to be a leg before he waved it around at police cars that were parked in the area. So that's what I saw. So he was arrested on March 22nd on one misdemeanor count of removal of human remains from other than a cemetery, one misdemeanor count of possession of controlled substance paraphernalia, most likely his meth pipe, and one felony offense of revocation of felony probation, according to records from Kern County Sheriff's Office obtained by E! News. So police arrived at the scene of the fatal train collision that killed the unidentified victim around 8 a.m. March 22nd. That same day, Tellez was arrested. E! News has reached out to the Kern County District Attorney's Office but has not heard back and has been unable to locate Tellez's legal representation. I was completely shocked when I saw it, so I'm sure that footage exists if you can stomach it out there. It was hard to see and it was a little bit blurred for me. Yikes. All right, our next article was sent to me. It comes from TMZ. And I don't know, I always thought TMZ was not a reliable source, like, at all. But it seems they're gaining some credibility, so again, take this however you want to. But anyway, it's from TMZ Sports, and the title says, Vince Young knocked out in wild bar fight, video shows. And I'm not going to lie and say I know who Vince Young is. But anyway, Vince Young was involved in a wild bar fight last month, one that ended after he was socked in the face and seemingly knocked unconscious. The fracas, I love that, which went down inside Tokyo Joe's Shot Bar in Houston, Texas at around 9 p.m. on February 4th, was all captured on video obtained by TMZ Sports. In the footage, you can see Young wearing a white hat, black shirt, and shorts, and another man began arguing with fellow bargoers when suddenly things turned physical. Unclear what was said, but the former Heisman Trophy runner-up can be seen pushing several men after exchanging words. Then, things get violent. The footage shows one man appearing to slam his drink in another man's face. Seconds later, the same man can be seen throwing an elbow that connects flush. The brawl then spills over to the other side of the bar where more punches are thrown. Just when it looks like things are beginning to calm down, Young gets blasted with a huge haymaker that sends him crashing to the floor. The ex-NFL star played on the ground for a few moments, although he did eventually get up. If this is who it is, it looks like he played for Green Bay and the Eagles. So the Houston Police Department tells us officers were called out to the scene by the bar's owner, who claimed he was on the one who was hit by the drink and the elbow. So cops say the man told them the tiff all started over a conversation about race and turned physical once he asked the patrons to leave. We're told, however, the man ultimately didn't want to press charges and no arrests were made. We've reached out to Young's reps for comment, but so far no word back yet. This next article, I'm debating on whether or not I should even share. I guess I'll share it. It's coming out of India. It's from WIONnews.com. And it says, prank gone wrong. Bengaluru man dies after friend fills air into his rectum with compressor. So, an unusual incident. A 24-year-old Bengaluru man lost his life to a prank that was supposed to be fun and harmless. It sounds fun and harmless. The young man, Yogesh, died of a colon burst after his friend put up an electric blow dryer used for vehicles into his rectum while playfully handling it. The incident took place on March 25th in Bengaluru's, I can't pronounce that area, where Yogesh used to work in a vehicle repair and service center. According to the police, Yogesh's friend Murali took a bike for servicing at his car service center to get it fixed and washed. After Yogesh repaired the bike and washed it, he was drying the vehicle with a heavy-duty air compressor or electric blow dryer. During banter between the two friends, Murali started blowing air on Yogesh's face, and to save his face from the hot air, he turned around and bent down. Murali then kept blowing the hot air, aiming towards Yogesh's backside, which eventually entered his rectum. Though the pipe was not so close to him, the air pressure was so high that it ruptured his anus, and he started bleeding profusely. Soon he felt unconscious, and Murali rushed him to the hospital. His intestines were completely damaged due to the high pressure from the blow dryer, as per the doctors. Yogesh was taken for an emergency operation, but he failed to respond and died at the hospital. So, long story short, don't do stupid shit like that, okay? I mean, I don't know why. I don't even know. So, there you go. So, our next article comes from WXII12.com, and the title reads, Grandparents and Grandchildren Were in Parked Car When Shot, Greensboro Police Say. So, coming out of Greensboro, North Carolina. WXII has learned new details about a shooting that left one person dead and two others injured, including a toddler. The shooting happened on Tuesday at 10:09 p.m. at the 1100 block of Vance Street in Greensboro. According to the police, when officers arrived, they found three gunshot victims, with two suffering from life-threatening injuries. Officers attempted to save Robert Wright, 71, but he died at the scene. The other victims, Wright's wife and their grandchild, a toddler, were taken to the hospital. Police say the woman's injury is not considered to be life-threatening, while the toddler is in critical but stable condition. Greensboro police say the victims were in a parked car on Vance Street when they were shot. One neighbor said they heard about 10 to 12 gunshots. The neighbor said that afterward, he went outside to see the scene in the car with several bullet holes. Another neighbor said, after hearing gunfire, they heard a child crying. The neighbor said a woman ran up to them with a toddler in her arms who had been shot. It's a real shock to everybody, a neighbor said. We are told neighbors jumped into action to help the family. They tell us that it's common to hear gunshots around, but not on Vance Street, where this took place. Quote, the neighborhood's like a family, you know, and you feel a lot of good people. You got the bad elements, too, but this street has more or less been immune from all of that, a neighbor said. It is unclear who fired at the victims. Police say there are currently no suspects. When asked if there's an ongoing threat or danger to the community, Greensboro police say that investigators do not believe that this was a random act of violence. This is Greensboro's 11th homicide of 2024, and we're not even in April, guys? Wow. So if you have any information, you need to get a hold of the Guilford Crime Stoppers. You know, just report it. If you know things, just report it. Help people. Be good. All right, our next article comes from WYFF News 4 in Greenville, South Carolina. And the title reads, Firefighter Impersonator with Garden Hose Arrested After Refusing to Leave the Fire Scene. This sounds super interesting. This one was emailed to me. So, Morganton, North Carolina. A man impersonating a firefighter and trying to put out a fire with a garden hose was arrested after refusing to let firefighters do their job, according to the Morganton Department of Public Safety. Authorities said firefighters were called to a home around midnight Wednesday on Moorhead Street. When firefighters first arrived, they said a neighbor was on scene dressed in FDNY fire gear and trying to put out the fire with a garden hose. And then there's a picture of him, and I assure you, I assure you, this dude is flying high. He is high as a kite. You can barely even tell that he has eyeballs peeping out from those eyelids. That cracks me up. Morganton firefighters began to put out the fire, however. They said the neighbor refused to leave or allow firefighters to begin to work. That's not nice. After multiple commands, law units responded and took Christopher Victor Miglino, 37, of Morganton into custody. He was charged with the following. Resist, delay, obstruct public officer, impersonating a firefighter / medical personnel, and city ordinance violation, obedience to fire personnel. He did not receive a bond since he was currently out on pretrial release. He was already out on pretrial release. And that's the end of the article. That's a joke. If you know who sent this to me, you need to keep me abreast of this. I need to know more. Okay, so last little bit is that I was also kind of thinking about that we would sort of once in a while research something together, right? So here I am actively doing something that I hadn't. So we're going to Google a story that I've been trying to keep up on. Have you guys been keeping up with the Madeline Soto case, right? So I remember I did the Monday morning murder in the news about her being missing, and I got the news that she had already been found. And I was super sad that I had missed that article, you know, like, because they do these once a week, that I had missed that update. And so now I'm just super hyper focused on this, right? And we understand that the, quote, stepfather, although we don't know if they were ever married, has been arrested because he had disturbing child stuff on his phone, and they are saying that it was Madeline and that he had been the boyfriend of her mother since she was, what, 8 years old, I believe? Anyway, so I've been keeping track of all of this. Her little body found just dumped on the side of the road, like in some trees. It's bad. So, you know, but we've been waiting on the medical examiner's report. You know, we don't have him actually being charged with her murders, but he's not going anywhere because they got him for the disgusting shit that was on his phone, right? So they've got him. He's not going anywhere. So we're all trying to be patient. So I'm just kind of Googling Madeline Soto to see if there has been anything new. But I'm not seeing anything as of since Friday. So we still don't. Hopefully we get the medical examiner's report this week. Monday, preferably, but that's just my patience. And so I'm super invested into this case. So let me know what you think about it, too. Do you think that Mama's just in complete shock? Do you think she knew? Do you think she took part or had a hand? Would love to know. I'm not blaming her with anything, but, you know, all of the body language experts and all of these other, you know, little things are starting to come out that I still want to believe that she's innocent, but are concerning, right? So let me know what you think about that too. And anything else, just keep sending me these articles. This is fantastic. You guys have been great. I really appreciate it. And outside of that, you know, it's Monday. It's a new week. We'll get through it. It's okay. It's just last week on repeat for most all of us, right? Those of you that work the weekends, as I always say, I already said, and I'll say it again, thank you. We appreciate your sacrifice, especially as bad as I hear people are treating customer service workers these days. Guys, honestly, it's shameful. It's pretty shameful. And I get some of the reasons, you know, but regardless, let's be nice, okay? So outside of that, I love you guys. I do. These are fun. I'm glad that you enjoy them. I feel like I'm kind of keeping up on gossip and stuff with my buddies, you know. It's fantastic. So have a good week, guys. Bye.